Today's program is brought to you by CloudRide, the first vape juice with flavors created by a James Beard award-winning chef. For more information, visit cloudridevapor.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And we have a couple of very, very busy people in the studio today. We got a lot to talk about, so we should just jump right into it. Welcome to the show, Martin and Rebecca Kate.
Aloha. Good to be here.
Aloha. So, you guys are in town.
Because you're running all over the country.
Yeah.
You going out of country with this tour?
In fact, Sunday we're going to Toronto, and then
that's not out of country.
It's close. Well, then we have more legitimately out of country, London and Athens coming up.
Wow. Touring your new book, Smuggler's Cove.
Yeah.
Indeed. Smuggler's Cove, exotic cocktails, rum, and the cult of tiki, to be long and tedious about it.
You always have to have that extra bit.
Gotta have the subtitle.
Yeah, man. So I've gotten to check out the book recently. It's really cool, man. It's speaking of lengthy, it is a big book, man.
It's a tome.
Yes. You were saying before the show that you could crush your ice with it.
You can use absolutely. If you don't like the book, you can tenderize chicken breasts with it. Anything, you know, it's 3 pounds of that's $10 a pound. That's real value in reading. We had been, the idea had begun as, you know, more typical cocktail book, in other words, just doing glamour shots and our recipes and how we do them. But we wanted to expand it to really talk about how try to put tiki in the complete context of the Polynesian pop movement and how it's all about. It's not just the drinks, it's the art, it's the music, it's the sculpture, it's all the elements that come together to create the experience. So we want to talk about that. Of course, we did the drinks. Of course, we did the recipes. But we also wanted to talk about rum and how to better understand an incredibly complex and diverse spirit that unfortunately is kind of opaque to most consumers. It just isn't, there's nothing, most rum bottles don't convey their value or anything, really any good information at all about what's in the bottle.
Well, rum's kind of
it's outlaw.
The wild west of spirits.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's made everywhere. There's all kinds of styles and there's no real rules. Yeah.
Well, there's some, but they're not always enforced.
Right.
And that's the problem.
And that's the Wild West part.
Yes. Different countries enforce them differently, which adds to the confusion.
Yep.
So.
So, we unfortunately, everyone's kind of notion of rum is gold, white, dark, which doesn't really mean anything. So we really wanted to try to get people to understand it from a production-based standpoint rather than just these sort of outdated terms. I mean, you pick up a bottle of single malt scotch, you know what it is. It's very clear is what the product is. And rum can be a little trickier that way.
Sure. And they think, well, speaking of scotch and rum tend to be like the most diverse spirits out there, you know, like they really change a lot from one to the other. So before you opened Smugglers and the other bars, you guys have five bars now. Were you collecting rums
you living the tiki lifestyle already?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like the Desmonds.
We built our first home tiki bar in '99.
Oh cool.
And that's where this madness all began, is trying to figure out these drinks, trying to find recipes where you could either, you know, old books or Jeff's books, and you'd pick them apart, and then you'd say, okay, well, this recipe sounds great. Let's see. It calls for, four rums, and, okay, they're all, okay, well, I'm going to go shopping, and you go down to the liquor store, and you come back, and you're shaking because how light your wallet suddenly is. You're like, God, I just dropped $200 on
Well, this is even if you could find the rums in question.
Or even knew what you were
especially,
looking for.
Especially, you know, 15, 16 years ago. But we would come back, and then you'd make the drink. You'd say, oh, this is terrific. I really like this drink. But why did I have to buy four rums? Where did that come from? And so that's where you kind of start going down that rabbit hole of saying, you taste all those rums by themselves. You're like, these are completely different. I wouldn't even put these in the same, you know, if I was blind tasting, I might even consider these the same spirit category.
Sure.
So that's where you start falling down this rabbit hole of why does it taste this way? Where was it made? And and how did it end up like this? And that's a fascinating story to me.
I think, like, the thing with rum to me, it's, I always said, it's like, it, rum is a spirit for collectors,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you have to have so many different ones to pull off these drinks, right?
Right.
So, like, in your travels, you know, like, getting, like, Cuban rums and things like that, you know, like, just finding something weird from, like, India, you know, or, like,
sure.
you know, just crazy stuff. So that's what a kind of like brought me into rum, because I am a collector of many things.
Not me, pal. I'm so a consumer.
Yeah,
I buy it, I drink it. That's how it works.
It is better to drink it than to look at it.
Well, I mean, like the other thing that got me, first of all, into tiki when I was a kid, it was aesthetic, you know, like the mugs and like the decor and everything, and like mid-century modernism. Which is why Tiki Adam Kolsar, like he was straight edge until he was 37.
Yeah,
he never drank, and the whole reason why he got into it is because of the kind of like design.
It's
elements.
Everything outside the glass.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's, frankly, as a guy who, you guys know me well enough to know that I don't drink a lot of sweet drinks, and I rarely ever touch juice. I think that's the part of Tiki that I like. I like the immersive, and we've been talking about it on the show recently as well. Yeah. Like, it's that experiential. The whole room is into it with you because the room itself is into it.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys build, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We really like escapist environments that celebrate the heritage and work with the artists that are in this community. I've been working, you know, in this community, in this milieu for decades. And it is, you're right. When kids find this stuff, it's oftentimes because it's certainly at least kids of a certain generation whose parents might have taken them to a tiki bar back when they were still around, wherever, anywhere in the United States, when there were still these places. And it kind of puts that lasting imprint on you. You know, you're 8 years old and it's your first trip to the Maikai or something like that. And you see this place and it's just magic to you as a kid. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, amazing to you. It's the kind of the same, you know, all that kind of wonderful over-the-top mid-century design. We loved, you know, Americans loved themed restaurants in mid-century America. We had our, you know, had your ye olde British chop house themes and your German, your Swiss ski lodge themes and your German brat houses and your tiki bars. And everybody liked that because it was like a cultural experience. It was like taking a little, you know, kind of a casual
medieval
cultural
times.
Yeah,
sure. Benihana.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Benihana, right? But it was this kind of, and it all really, once that kind of fell out of favor, once all those places got torn down, people now just eat in very, you know, kind of more austere dining experiences, sure. more modernist, more sleek restaurants. And all that style and escapism is now kind of relegated to theme parks. So that's really where a lot of kids today are going to experience that sort of fantasy, is to go into a Disneyland or something like that and see that. Now, unfortunately, not as much as restaurants, also because we don't let kids into ours, they're never gonna be inspired.
Probably they'll go to It's a Small World or whatever, and they'll get their commemorative plastic mug, and then they'll grow up and say, I didn't experience that.
I want to say on behalf of probably the majority of us, thank you for not letting kids in your bar.
we consider it a resolutely adult experience.
Oh, man. I live my life that way. I try and go nowhere where there are children.
I think it's really interesting, though, what you were saying. Like, we did go through a period, and I think... So you're saying, like, sleek, like, modern, like, really, like, clean, like, designs for bars. I mean, like, bars and restaurants, you know, because the chef would want it to be all about the food.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Focus on the plate.
Absolutely.
Like, when you go to Tourist in Greenpoint, the beer bar, it's just sleek.
Yeah.
And it's, like, all about what's in the glass.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But I think, like, and we've talked about this recently, too, about, like, how we had to go through that asshole phase over the past 10 years of, like, the vest and tie. And it was to teach people, like, what we were doing. And now, like, we have been for a little bit, I'm happy to say, able to, like,
relax,
wear Aloha shirts, and, you know. And
I wore my favorite one for you today. The one you made relentless fun of a few weeks ago.
I did not. Did I?
But the postcards.
Only in love, I'm sure.
I only made fun of you because it's like, you know, like the imagery of, like, the like morning drive radio host with a Hawaiian shirt, you know, like a big cup of coffee and being
good
wacky.
Morning, Heritage Radio Network listeners.
Back to back hits.
We need a sound effects box in here.
He's got one out there.
Where are you at, Pierre?
Goal.
Oh, man. That was good.
But yeah, so I feel like in that same kind of vein, I guess there are those places that I remember as a kid. I mean, I'm 46, so I definitely remember going to those kind of places that had, like, I especially remember the Buddha mug with his hands up in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Just white ceramic.
Very popular at Benihana.
Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah. I remember, you know.
And you wanted to drink out of that.
Oh, man,
so
you
bad.
Had to have it. Didn't matter what was in it.
Yeah.
Don't care. Motor oil?
Shirley Temple's fine.
It's blue? I'll take it.
Yeah, whatever. 10 cherries and an orange wedge? Good.
Totally, man.
But then that made me, you know, have that curiosity for those kind of things as an adult. I want to go see, like, this. How do adults do this?
Yeah.
You know, I was with adults, but they were absolutely 100% not paying attention to me. You know, because they were trying to have a good time, and that was just a nuisance.
Or you were at least happily distracted.
Yeah, with that mug and all those cherries. Right.
Put the guy in the Buddha mug. He'll be okay. We can talk for 20 minutes without him interrupting.
You should tell your Zanzibar story. So.
Well, I tell it in the beginning of the book, but this was where it hit for me. There was a restaurant, a tropical-themed restaurant in Santa Cruz that my parents and I would visit. And it was called Zanzibar. It was fun to say. And
Still is.
And we would go, and I would always ask my parents, "Can we go to Zanzibar? Can we go? Come on, mom, to Zanzibar." Uh-huh. And they would say, "You know, fine." And they'd kind of roll their eyes and go, because I always wanted to go because they had this fruit salad, and it was served in a giant conch shell. So it was all these pieces of fruit. You're probably straight out of a can. Who cared, right? It was, you know, the 70s, and all this, you know, fruit would be spilling out of this big,
like a horn of plenty,
Neptune's own bounty. And I loved it. And, you know, I probably picked at it because I didn't really want to eat fruit salad. But I just loved the way it looked.
The presentation.
That's the presentation. Right. The experience. Dining as experience. And I think it was, you know, that definitely planted a seed in me. Totally stayed with me. And it was the... I just wish, you know, it's kind of fun that places are doing that again, because we're starting to, you know, everyone's just like, hey, actually, you know, this is actually fun. When we share a scorpion bowl together, it's fun. It's engaging. It's social. You can't really drink. You can't all lean in with long straws and a scorpion bowl and check your email. You know, put the damn phones down.
Seriously.
Talk
yeah,
to your
yeah.
friends. Make eye contact. Guess who's going to put the most spit in the bowl. Stuff like that, you know. It's
who's going to drink the fastest.
Exactly.
That's then,
yeah.
He's had 3 beers on the show already. We've been live for 10 minutes.
Hey, my half day off.
So it's a, you know, I think people love, and we love to provide that social experience. And that's why, you know, we try not to encourage phones. We have no televisions. We have no video games. We have no distractions in there. Distractions.
The Wi-Fi actually barely works it does.
Yeah, barely works. And people are like, oh, don't you have Wi-Fi in here? I'm like, no, it's 1958, man. There's no Wi-Fi. Yeah. What's Wi-Fi?
Talk to your Weepy? Friends.
Yeah.
Was that a small island? Of
That's right.
There we go. The Weepy Tiki drink.
So I think that's, you know, that coupled, and you were mentioning about the modernism, the other thing that comes with that whole, exactly, you're exactly right what you said about I just want you to look at the food. The other thing that tends to go along with that is kind of putting you in small tables, super close together, hard seating surfaces. It's loud. It's crowded. It's designed to turn. You know, it's designed to get people out of there.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks for coming in. You know, we got to turn this table, eat up, Instagram your food, and get out.
Yeah.
You know, and so when I build these new places now, I'm always, you know, my focus is all on comfort, which is probably not the most business-minded thing because people don't leave. But Whitechapel in particular is just upholstered to the ends of the earth. You know, we've padded every surface.
It looks beautiful, man.
Thank you very much. We're really, really proud of how it came out. But it's, you know, it is specifically designed to be really comfortable. You know, and that's what I think that's kind of missing. I wish people, you know, spent, I think it's, you know, eating out is kind of a treat. It's your friends and your family, and you should
feel terrible.
I
did the exact opposite. I remove stools from the room as the night goes on. I don't want anybody sitting down.
Musical chairs.
I do. I start with 6, and by 8 o'clock, there's 0.
Well, we do pull a few bar stools at Smuggler's Cove on Friday and Saturday because we just got to have more access to the bartenders and just keep it moving because it's too crowded. But
how long has Smuggler's Cove been around now?
We turn 7 in December.
Oh wow! Congrats.
Coming up. Yeah, thank you very much. And going strong, no complaints. It's a great team. We're very fortunate to have virtually zilch for turnover. And also, not only are they still there and fast and happy, but they're all, and I'm sorry, guys, but if you're listening, but they're all very old. And but so it's kind of all the more remarkable that they're keeping up the pace in their later years.
They're not that.
No, they're the same as age as me, so I can say it. But it's, but it's you know, it is pretty impressive. But it's also, it's guys who said, this isn't a bartending isn't a step to somewhere else. It's this is their passion.
What
this
I want
to
do for
this is what they want to do for the rest of their lives, and they're dedicated to being as good as possible at it. So, it's not I'll be in a play this week if you come down and bring two of your friends. It's real passion for the profession.
I've only gotten to go to Smugglers once, and it was on my birthday a couple of years ago. I was in town. My twin brother lives in San Francisco, and Twinsmas. We're out on Twinsmas. I don't even think he made it that night, but it was late.
And Smugglers was your last stop.
It was the last
and
stop.
You don't remember anything.
No, I remember. I remember.
Is this a story you've heard before?
Yeah, that's how it always goes. We beg people to come first. Please don't make us your close out.
You gave me a rum barrel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I was going to bring it today and have you autograph it, but
I'll be back.
I totally forgot.
I'll be back. We've been terrible, frankly, Rebecca and I, about visits to New York, and haven't done it nearly enough. So it's always we got to start.
I can't even imagine how much it changes on a daily basis.
Oh yeah,
to come back
impossible.
Impossible, and that's one of the things you have to just get to that resignation point. Like, oh, we're gonna get all these. No, just
choose a few,
and don't get bent out of shape if you can't make all the bars you wanted to. Just come more often. That's the better answer.
Well, it's kind of crazy too. Like, we're at a point now in New York City where we are kind of in limbo with tiki bars. We don't really have anything that's just straight up as far as a modern tiki bar. Mm-hmm. We've got Jade Island on Long Island.
Right.
The place in Astoria, what's it called? King Yum's.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's one in Ridgewood.
These old school tiki joints.
Yeah.
It's current, no modern ones right now. Yeah. We've got Cienfuegos is rum focused, but it's not tiki.
Yeah. But the cool thing is without having a mass amount of tiki bars here now, what's cool is you can go to a lot of the classic cocktail bars and get really amazing tiki drinks.
Yeah.
You come to my bar at Grand Army and we do tiki drinks all the time.
Yeah.
We always have them on menu, but it's really cool to see that even in a place like Maison Premier, you can get
Bronca Colada.
Or at Donna.
What started at Maison? Yeah. When Natasha was over there, that's where it came from.
I think that's one of the great...
It's Mother of Pearl, let's don't forget.
Sure,
Polynesian, vegan, tiki, amazing.
Vegan, I love that.
Yeah. I was skeptical at first, man. Yeah. When we switched over on Valentine's Day, we made the switch.
Yeah.
And we have... The numbers have... It's ridiculous.
Wow.
I'm super happy with what's happening there.
Good. I think in some respects there's kind of a... sometimes there's a kind of a cultural break in terms of time. And one of the things that happened in New York is that most of the places were gone. It would be bereft if we didn't mention Otto Shrunkenhead, which was early into the game.
I go see punk shows there all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
I almost exclusively drink Suffering Bastards.
I had a
there.
Guitar stolen from playing.
You told me that story.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But there's in a lot of the places where new places have opened that are really, really tiki focused, it tends to be in towns where tiki never went kind of 100% away. Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Chicago, San Diego. These are all cities where they all still had moving, thriving, historic tiki bars. And really outside of, say Jade Island, but in Manhattan, they were all gone. And there were never really a lot in Manhattan. There were a handful that were big and very good, but it never had the intensity of Chicago, which had tons, or certainly Los Angeles, of course.
Ohio had a ton of tiki bars.
Yeah, Ohio is great. Ohio,
the further you get from the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're almost more satisfying that way. Like one of the biggest, best tiki bars was in Columbus, was called the Kahiki. And huge, giant A-frame building and filled with fish tanks. And, but it's all the more... It's all the more charming in a lot of ways the further you are from the South Pacific and the further you are from warmer climes, period, because it's, nothing's more special than, a February in Columbus, right? I mean, it's got to be, freezing and cold. And here's this place where the torches are lit out front.
Yeah.
It's a literal oasis. You walk in, it's warm, it's dusk, there's a tropical drink, there's a big poo-poo platter. I mean, it's, it feels like an absolute haven in the middle of, a cold Midwest winter. So it's
transportive.
It's, Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for, you know, great tiki bars in L.A., but, you know, L.A. looks, you know, it's there's palm trees and sunshine
every day of the year.
So it's
vacation without leaving your town.
Yeah, yeah. So that's that. You know, that's what was so special when there were tiki bars back in the 50s and 60s on every corner. It was that perfect escape. You could say, you know, God, I got this terrible job at the industrial solvents plant, you know, and you're trudging home. You know, you don't want to go home just yet. You're just like, you know, but if I just take one right.
Drink some non-industrial solvents.
There's a bunch of screaming kids at home, and you know, I don't want to go there just yet. I just need a little something to loosen the tie, you know. So you take that one right turn instead of that one left turn, and you find that corner tiki bar, and you come in, and you can just feel that. That's what we love. I want to just feel that stress just fall off your shoulders and just take a deep breath and just hold that nice cold drink in your hand and just forget about it for a few minutes. Forget about your boss. Forget about your day. I mean, that's what we all do. You know, we're all in hospitality to help you forget about your 9 to 5. It's like, come drink your troubles away, right?
Yeah, man.
So
I've got the meds.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right.
Well, that seems like a good time to take a break.
Yeah. Before we go to break real fast, though, I do want to mention that today at 7 o'clock at the 92nd Street Y, you're doing a quick talk and then a book signing of your book, Smuggler's Cove, which we've been talking about.
Yep, indeed. Looking forward to it.
So 7 p.m., 92nd Street Y. If you're listening, make your way up that way. And then we're going to take a break now.
Yep, let's do it. Yeah. We'll be back in just a moment.
Cheers.
Music for this commercial break is brought to you by RecTech, and this one is called Torchlight.
This show is brought to you this week, and has been for a few weeks, by CloudRide Vapor. So these guys are making these different flavors for e-cigarettes. And, man, so there I was telling you before the show, I, like, went down the rabbit hole last night watching all these, like, vape competitions.
Yeah, it's...
You know about these, right?
It is. When we first got this thing and I went and bought the vape pen, I had to look at some videos just to see how to use it. And those videos that pop up of the competition vape,
it's like a big deal, man.
Smoke blowing, whatever. It's crazy. It's crazy.
It like makes
it's very hypnotizing.
If I didn't even smoke, I would kind of want to do it just to like fuck around with the smoke rings and all the crazy shit they do. Anyway, so there are all these different flavors that are created by a James Byrd award-winning chef,
tested by scientists,
and check them out. CloudRide Vape. Vapor.com, and you can get 20% off your purchase by using the code SPEAK when you go to their website. Check them out, CloudRide Vapor. And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and in the studio today we have Rebecca and Martin Kate from Smuggler's Cove, amongst other places. They just gave me, during the break, this really, really amazing tiki mug.
Beautiful.
Thanks so much. This is
You're welcome.
Badass.
It's the one on the cover of the book, right?
Yep.
It's beautiful.
Oh, man.
What is this guy? Does he have a name?
We call him Kuhiko. It's kind of a fusion of, he's a ku. He's a traditional ku design, Hawaiian ku. And the word kahiko means old. In Hawaiian, so we've sort of made up our own word, Kuhiko.
And designed by Crazy Al Evans.
Exactly, thank you.
California artist.
Yep, based on a traditional ku that's actually in the Bishop Museum in Honolulu.
Wow, dude, this is amazing.
Kind of looks like Predator.
It's got the headdress, yeah.
So you sell these at the bar?
We do, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Cool.
We have a couple different editions of glazes and things. Folks love to collect all the different glazes and things.
Yeah.
We've sent a few thousand out the door.
I'll have to take a photo and put that on the website so people can see what we're talking about, or just go buy Smuggler's Go.
It's on the book.
Yeah, and it's cover the book. Cover the book.
Pick up your book and look at the cover. Pick up your 3-pound tome.
If you can.
Right. Yeah. If you can pick lift it.
You can do curls with it.
Well, I was just going to say, that's great. Yeah, do it repeatedly. 15 every morning and, you know, start building up your body strength with it.
One thing that we talked about before and the first half of the show was the focus on, like, rum. But what one cool thing that I noticed about the book is that, and it kind of reminds me of reading, like, the old books, like, where it would just be like, white Puerto Rican rum. You know, you haven't gone brand specific, but you've listed in each of these categories, like, Jamaican gold or black rum or dark rum or agricole, you know, like, you've done the work to put, like, there's, like, a key.
Yes,
if you will, like to like reference like all these different things that fall in different
all this nomenclature that means nothing. You've categorized it so that it makes sense.
Yeah, well, you've listed brands like all the brands that you like that fit in those categories. So like you actually get to essentially choose your own adventure.
Yep,
and that's what the coolest thing about Tiki too. It's like there are so many, like there's always the saying like what one rum can do, three can do better.
Yeah.
But you've allowed the reader to essentially do what we do at, like, when we're at home or at the bar and mess around with different combinations of rums and just made it very simple that way.
Right. So that even really cool. a particular style category, within that category, you might have 20, 30 brands, and so they're all going to be different, and that's great. So play around with it, and it's sort of a guide. This is the style that's going to work in the drink, but even within that, you're going to get all kinds of variety. And we encourage the reader, drinker, to label all their bottles with the category number. So then you can just really play really fast. So
there's really no way around
brilliant.
It. There's no real way around, you know, making, you know, buying a lot of rums to make exotic cocktails. It's just, but what we tried to do is keep it as tight as we could. I mean, you can make almost everything in the book with 6 rums. And you can put those 6, and you can choose from any number. Like, say, category number 4 has 15 varieties to choose from. You pick the 6 you really love from those categories, label the next of them, and then you can just fast read down there. Okay, this one calls for 1.5 ounces of number 4. Boom, you know, and you can make it. You can even, we've had people do, you know, colored rubber bands or colored electrical tape around the neck, so you can color code it, keep it fast. Guy just sent me a picture the other day. He had it printed out. He had his list, his categories printed out. He was at the liquor store and he was like doing his category shopping. I love it. It just makes me so happy
that
people are into that, because we get a lot of emails about people saying, this is great. Now I really finally know what I'm reaching for and why I'm reaching for it.
Isn't that how like Don the Beachcomber and Trader Vic did back in the day? They would
just have number coding. Yeah.
Unlabeled bottles, or like labeled but
mystique.
Everything, right, absolutely everything behind Don's bar was the syrups, the juices, the rums. They're all encoded and numbered bottles.
Don's mix, Don's spices,
exactly like right.
Number 2, number 4,
whatever. All that. It was all about, you know, so that a rival bartender couldn't poach. I mean, rival bar owner rather couldn't poach his bartenders.
Right.
You say, hey, you know, I make zombie. Sure, it's one part of spices number 2, or one part, you know, this and that. And so that was kind of the genius. But it's also, it's the double-edged sword. It's terribly clever, but it was also one of the reasons
we lost all the recipes,
lost
right?
All the damn recipes.
And then Barry had to go and, like, crack the code.
Exactly.
It was Barry, Jeff Barry, Barry that, that kind of cracked
absolutely.
Code for everybody, right?
It was one of my favorite quotes is the rum writer, Wayne Curtis, who introduced Jeff once at a Tales talk by saying, if you were a bartender in the heyday of Tiki, and you're on your deathbed, the last face you might see before you draw your last breath is Jeff Barry leaning over you with a pen and a paper saying, so what the heck was in mix number 4? You know?
Tell me.
So, but, you know, he did an amazing job of tracking all that stuff down, finding the old companies that made the syrups and made the mixes and things, and, you know, talking to descendants and everything else. I mean, it's something we mention in the book when we talk about Jeff's work, because it's so, it wasn't just, oh, I found old recipes. He found old recipes, but that was just the first part. The second part was figuring out, like, imagine if, you know, you found first person to find the Bon Vivant's Companion, but it didn't tell you what anything was. It just had numbers and codes.
Right.
Where would you even begin,
yeah.
right? So that's what's so impressive about it.
Yeah. It's, well, you know, like I said before, like, this, the tiki drinks and rum, I mean, like, all together there, it's, you have to have that collector's like mentality. You have to explore.
Investigative journalist.
Yeah.
Right. It rewards the obsessive.
Yeah.
No question.
Sure.
As does our rum club.
As does our rum club. You know, we have a lot of members who are drinking their way through and they love keeping track. We built, over a course of a couple of years, we built this terrific app. It's not really an app, it's a mobile website, but a way to go on and track your progress, and you can see your totals and you can see what's next. It allows you to keep
notes.
Yeah. You can give yourself, you know, whatever your own personal rating system is, you can apply it to the rum, you know, if you maybe star.
What's the site called?
Well, you have to come to Smugglers and you have to drink your way through 20 educational chapters, and then we give you the URL.
Wow.
a company called Bevager helped us immensely run this. So.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. There's this company called Bevager that does an inventory management control software for bars, and we said,
You're the right people to
help us with this project. We used to do it on paper and keep all everybody's booklets behind
the bar.
Yeah. Well, what is it? Rumba has that map, right? You know the
Rumba's got the map. Yeah,
where you go through the map. Do they hold the map?
They keep the map.
I would lose that thing.
So
lost.
But we've put this checklist club into place at Whitechapel for our gin club, and we're about to put it in place at False Idol, and we'll probably add it to Holly Paley next year.
So False Idol is a new one in San Diego.
Spanking new.
That's awesome. Yeah. I saw some photos of the interior. It looks incredible, man.
We really went all the way.
You
on
did,
it.
Man.
And we were able to work with some terrific artists, including a guy who is a real tiki pioneer. In fact, he was the first person to ever actually make and commercially sell tiki mugs again after, you know, all these years. His name's Bosco, and he is lives near San Diego and was an art school student with Mark Ryden, and just a terrific artist, and has spent years and years studying traditional Polynesian arts. We said, well, can we get some Bosco pieces in here? Sure. Well, we'll put a couple on the wall. How many? Well, no, let's just make the wall out of Bosco. So it is an unbroken wall of carving. Like every inch of this thing is carved. And he would carve these big panels, make them look like a traditional design or a modern California influenced design. Distress them, paint them, and they bury them in his backyard. Just bury them in the dirt for a month and a half to let him really get this kind of nice age to them. Take it back out, scrape some of the paint, all the dirt off, put a little seal on it, and put them up. You want to make, and then my buddy Notch, who built Smuggler's Cove and built Whitechapel, he went down there. He just lived in a hotel down the street for about a month and a half, and he just put it all together, and he puts all this top up and bamboo and thatch, and there's the floats are ridiculous. There's 450 glass floats in the place. It's insane. But he puts it all up and he gives it this wonderful treatment and this patina to it. You know, he goes through and he basically hand treats everything. It's like our joke is, but it's not really a joke, is we want these bars to look like people smoked in them for 40 years.
Yeah.
I want to have this nice kind of this kind of amber haze, you know, on everything. Totally. If you ever go to the Tiki Tea in Los Angeles,
just gonna say, man,
that's because somebody did smoke in there for 50.
They still do.
Not anymore.
They just stopped.
Wow. They had to hire an employee. The first ever employee ever after 52 years, something like that. Because they were starting to slow down and need a little help. And once you have an employee in California, you have to stop the smoking. It was always just a loophole.
Because they were all family. Yeah.
Right.
All owner, yeah.
Every employee was an owner.
Mike.
Yeah, Mike Jr., yeah. Mark. They all, in fact, they couldn't even hire a cleaning company to come the next day outside of service hours. So they had to do all their own cleaning, too. So they come in the next morning, they do all their own janitorial, too. So they had to do every single thing themselves.
Wow. Dedication to smoke.
Absolutely. That's a real passion.
Dedication to your audience who wants to smoke, I'm sure.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about the TKT, well, outside of, well, that's kind of a bummer, because there was all those, like, you know, you'd see some, like, group of, like, Samoan dudes just, like, smoking cigars and just, like, drinking zombies like crazy. But watching them make drinks, they would use a jigger, but they would just pour, and then it got to like 2 ounces, and they would just let it overflow for about 3 more ounces.
Yeah, yeah.
Just over the jigger, just falling into the mixing glass.
It's kind of a modified version of the it's a booze liberal version of the traditional Trader Vic's jigger serve, which is a kind of a complex way to start to fill your jigger until it's by 3/4 of where you want it to be, then tip the jigger with the little flick of the finger. And
while still pouring.
While still pouring, yeah. So it tops up just right.
Our bartender, Melissa at Smuggler's Cove, is an ex-Trader Vic's bartender, and she still does it.
She's sort of the last. Fun to watch, yeah. It's hard to do, and she's kind of the last of the Mohicans, to use a use a cheeky tea expression. but it was a it is fun in there, and I do love it. And, yeah, absolutely. It certainly made the customers happy. They loved having cigars and cigarettes in there. But, you know, the two kids, Mike's two kids, Mike Jr. and Mark, you know, when they were 22, they sounded like this. Yeah. They're like, you know, Dad, we're aging a little bit in here. Can we slow down on the smokes?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's crazy. Yeah. Then there's also a place like down the street from there called like Wacko, I think, and they sell all the Tiki Farm mugs, mm-hmm.
all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's a great bookstore and gallery, gallery called La Luz de Jesus and Wacko and Soap Plant, I think, is the publishing arm of it. If I remember right, correctly, but terrific place. Yeah, great bookstores, great ephemera and stuff. They have terrific gallery stuff. They had, you know, that's where Shag, I think, had his first show, was in there, and stuff like that. So,
man, so okay, so back to the book tour. So tonight you've got the Y on, what is it, 92nd Street?
92nd Street Y.
And then tomorrow you're going to be at Cienfuegos?
Yes.
Cienfuegos,
yes.
95 Avenue A, upstairs.
There we go.
From 5 p.m. till 7-ish.
Yep.
2 quick hours of book signing and rum drinking.
Yep.
We're going to have some punch. You can go to the Cienfuegos Facebook page. And there's a link to buy tickets or just show up and buy a ticket when you get there, either way.
Yep. We've got tickets with or without book. So if you've got your book in hand, you can get the discounted just 2 drink ticket, or you can get the ticket.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you can get the book and 2 drinks, either way.
Cool.
Yeah. Either way, it's a steal.
Yeah.
And it's a great book.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
It's a really beautiful book, man. I was hanging out with the guys over at Clover Club, Ryan LaLoya and Jelani, and they were just like, they're both like really into Tiki, like hardcore about it. But
Corporal Captain in the first mate.
Yeah, in the first mate. Yeah.
They were like, it's like in the middle of brunch and they're just like staring at your book. And I was like, all right, guys, 2 things. One, it's busy in here. Give me the book. Yeah. I'm going to look at it. You work. And then I'll read it to you if that works.
That's right. Story time with Damon Bolte.
Once upon a time, there was a tiki bar. I love it.
It all started at Zanzibar.
Yeah. That's right.
That would have been a good title. It all started at Zanzibar.
That's your memoir. That's not a cocktail book.
There you go.
So go visit them at, if you're in the Bay Area, go to San Francisco, Smuggler's Cove and Whitechapel.
Yep.
If you're in Portland, go to Halle Pele.
Yep.
If you're in San Diego, go to
False Idol.
And if you're in Chicago,
Lost Lake. Right.
You guys are killing it. You're doing a great job at reviving this genre of drinks in such a really, really intensely, like, passionate way.
Yeah, well, because people who love this, they don't just go to a tiki bar. They live the tiki lifestyle. Yeah.
Absolutely.
They dress the part. They do the thing at all times.
Yeah. The San Diego tiki community is
huge. I've never seen
huge.
Nicole Desmond without a flower in her hair.
Oh, no, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never.
That is true.
So we're actually third Thursday of every month. It's like False Idol is dedicated to the San Diego tiki folks down there. So they have a thing called SD Ohana. And every third Thursday, the place is going to be theirs from opening till, I don't know, a couple hours in, but they can have the place themselves. And they're great. They've been super supportive and engaged. We had a sneak preview party just for them. I mean, there's 380 people on the San Diego Ohana Facebook page. It's a pretty big scene down there, because that's another city where Tiki never went away. It was always still very prominent in their architecture and things like that. So,
well, and all these, the lifestyle also, they all... A lot of them have these amazing home bars that are better than any commercial bar.
You can get away with murder in them, because you can put all kinds of amazing rarities on the walls that would last 3 seconds in a commercial bar.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we've seen some really incredible over the country.
All over the country. That's one of our favorite things. It's like you can just be driving down any street, suburban housing tract. Every house looks the same, but behind that one garage, there is a paradise. They're all hidden in there. You know, there's people all over America with these things.
Yeah,
and you know, it's just fun. Everyone wants to build their own oasis, their own private escape. You know, if you live in a city without a tiki bar, you just, you know what? Forget it. I want to have my own. I'm going to just have my little backyard paradise. You know, some guys will build a man cave or a sports bar, whatever. You know, it's all whatever brings you that joy. You know, it's that. But you know, so many people love it that just.
Well, the new book, Smuggler's Cove, would be a great guide to building that home bar.
It has a chapter about such things.
There we go.
Yep. Nice. All right. Well, thanks again, Rebecca and Martin, for coming on the show today. It's
been
a real pleasure. I'm glad to see you in New York. I'll be seeing you out on the West Coast sooner than you can say aloha.
Right on.
Well, I'll be in San Diego on November 1st.
Oh, fantastic. Oh,
I'll be at Polite Provisions.
Oh, very cool.
Excellent. Yeah. We're launching, I guess I can say it now, Scrappy's Bitters made a flavor just for us. It's called Polite Amore.
Oh, nice.
So it's a coast-to-coast bitters. I'm not going to tell you the flavor. We're going to announce that later. But it's a done deal. I've got a bottle.
Cool, man.
Come check it out at the bar. I'll sneak you some.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's been great, guys. And congratulations on the book. Congratulations on all the success with your bars and with the new spot in San Diego. It's lovely seeing you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Next time you're in New York, come back on the radio show.
We'll do.
Absolutely.
All right. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Until next week. So who do we have on next week?
Next week will be another book. We're doing a lot of books. Next week's
like
going to be, not exactly a month, but definitely 4 weeks in a row. We've got Brad Thomas Parsons next week from his new book, Amaro. He's very well known for writing the James Beard Award-winning book, Bitters. And now he's got a book coming out called Amaro. He's our next week. And then the following week is dear friend Robert O. Simonson from the New York Times, and he's going to be talking about his new book called A Proper Drink.
Yeah, of the old-fashioned book fame.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yes. Well, and I feel like his fame is more New York Times, but sure, sure. He also wrote a little book that crushed it.
Yeah. So that's our exciting publisher.
So that's three books in a row, and I'm trying to line up a fourth book for the following week, which would be Kara Newman and her book Shake Sipster, I can't remember, but it's an entire book of equal parts cocktails.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It starts with the first chapter is two, the second chapter is three, four, and five. So,
nice.
Five part, but all equal parts.
I missed my deadline on submitting my cocktail recipes.
Everyone's heartbroken. Well, mostly you, but
I love equal parts cocktails, man. Anyway, so yeah, we've got an exciting month, and it's been
trying to get our book learning on.
Yeah, I got to learn how to read. I know how to listen.
Step one.
So check out all the other shows we have on Heritage Radio Network. Until then, Damon
and Souther,
and that's it. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The blue buns is grooving, them rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some in the air.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.